My top five podcasters, Chris Lambert, and probably myself, but this ain't about that. The Mundane Festival is where you're at. If you've been tapped in, you know what's up. If you're a first timer, hey, welcome to the club. The cost of admission is simply a subscription, then rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Don't worry about change ups, the cast won't break up. Even when that $1 million contract show up, a stand up guy who's a stand up comedian with a stance on everything from food to media. So welcome to the show, please take your seat. Let's find out what he's got in store this week. Who, me? I'm Don Will, your opening act. Thanks for coming out. Please clap. The Mundane Festival. With your host, Chris Lambert.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, June 13th, 2021. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. And if you're really into this thing, I need you to go over to Apple Podcasts. Give this show a 5-star review. Let everybody know why you like it, because it's simply the right thing to do. And if you want to take your love and appreciation of this show to an even deeper level, I need you to go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival and become a patron of this show. It's $3 a month. You get hours and hours and hours of bonus content, new stuff every month, along with the hours and hours and hours and hours of bonus content. And right now, I want to show some love to my good friend, Scott Stanglin. He's a public figure, so I'll say his full name. Good friend of mine, friend of the podcast. Really cool thing to have people that actually know you and respect the work that you do, like your other artist friends supporting the show. So that's really fucking cool. Thank you to Scott. And also want to thank Alicia. I don't want to say her full government, but Alicia, I really appreciate you signing up. Thank you so much. Thank you for everybody that continues to support the show. I'm not going to restart this intro. This is episode 513, and I have two, not one, but two super special return guests, comedian Randolph Terrence of the Three Guys on Podcast, and Rod Morrow of the Black Guy Who Tips podcast that you can find exclusively on Spotify. Those guys are with me to discuss the Underground Railroad. We did a Underground Railroad roundtable, talked about Barry Jenkins's new Amazon series, I believe limited series, based on the Pulitzer Prize winning novel The Underground Railroad by the great Colson Whitehead. So I'm going to share that roundtable discussion with you all in a few minutes. Right now, I just want to talk to you. You know, I am sitting here in my apartment recording this intro. And I'm feeling good. I'm feeling pretty good. I had a really good week. What did I do? I bought a car charger that you can hear more about on Patreon. Now, isn't that the super exclusive type of thing that you want to hear about my life? That I went online, I opened up my computer, went online, did a Google search of the best car chargers in the world, according to the New York Times, and I bought one. All right. So if you want to hear more about that, go to Patreon. Stop being a cheap fuck and go over to Patreon. I got a car charger for my iPhone. I really like it. And I did some comedy, folks. I did some comedy in Hartford, Connecticut, opening for my good friend, J.L. Covan. It was fucking awesome. It was great to get to do stand-up in front of people and to live my childhood dream and do make people laugh in a strip mall. Actually, it's not a strip mall. It's a nice mall. I didn't get to walk around it, but, you know, if you looked at the map, there'd be some pretty cool stores, you know. You know, so I had a great time doing that. It was so much fucking fun. And it was great to be there. Shout out to the homie Keith. Shout out to Tanya and her sister. Thanks for coming to support JL. It was so much fun. And I had a great time. What else is going on, guys? New Sky Zoo album's out. It's great. Loving that one. Getting back into listening to music. Got to get back into. As things are opening up, I'm just kind of having a hard time with playing video games. Just nothing has really grabbed me since Tilu 2, and it's been a year. Like I find myself getting excited about some of these games, and I get them and I play them. I'm just like, all right, you know, Returnal, I paid for the special edition, and I'm not getting my money's worth because I only played it for an hour, and it's not Housemarque's fault. It's not the developer of that game. It's not their fault. It's mine. And I just been thinking about writing and trying to write jokes and trying to have something cohesive to make people laugh and to not be a fucking hack. So that's what goes on in my mind most of the time when I'm writing. And I try to be, you know, I'm just trying to be an artist that has a day job and really struggling with my work. And so it goes. But that's such is life, isn't it? So but I am excited. I think I've said this before. I'm excited about Horizon Zero Dawn. And I think whenever that comes out, probably fourth quarter 2021, that's something that I'll be into. And I got some shows coming up. Why don't I tell you about those? In July, I will be July 18th. Now this is July 18th through the 23rd. I will be at the Borgata in Atlantic City. That is going to be, so they're doing something new. So July 18th and 19th, there's a show, and the 20th and the 21st, there will not be a show. But Thursday and Friday on the 22nd and 23rd, there will be a show. So the 18th, 19th, the 21st and the 18th and 19th, and the 22nd through the 23rd, I will be there 9 o'clock at the Borgata. And then on the 20th, I will be at the Laughing Fox in Magnolia, New Jersey. So that's if you're in the South Jersey, Philadelphia area, I will be there. And once I find out, I'll be headlining the show there. And once I get more information on the tickets and stuff, I'll send that link out on Twitter and Facebook and the Instagram. And you guys will get to come to that show if you want. And I think that is about it. I hope you didn't hear my stomach growl. But I did, and I'm opening up the fourth wall and opening up my heart to you as a podcaster, which means I need to get something to eat. And I'm going to bring you to Randolph and Rod. So, you know, these things, I really love to get to talk to my friends about some of these TV shows and movies that come out and just get to have a discussion that evolves into an even deeper conversation about what's currently going on in society, what went on in another time period, and just to really get to have a really fun conversation with these guys, two of my good friends, and that have kept me sane in phone conversations and through podcasting. I think, you know, try not to be all sentimental, you know, but like, I think that's something that's really kept me going during the pandemic, you know, listening to my friends' podcast, being on podcasts with them. And these are two of the guys that have made this bearable when you're trying to do the right thing by following the guidelines from the government. So without further ado, listen to Randolph, Rod, and myself talk about the Underground Railroad on Amazon. Watch it if you're not watching it or whatever. All right. Thanks for listening, and please enjoy it. I want you guys to briefly talk about what you've been watching, and then we'll get into the our discussion on the Underground Railroad. How about you start, Rod?
Oh, what I've been watching. I just finished Sweet Tooth on Netflix, based off a comic book about a kid that's born in a post-pandemic, in the middle of a pandemic that has ravaged the world. And he's a hybrid of a deer and a human. And it's about like the journey of this kid trying to find out where he comes from. There's a bunch of hybrids, and some of them are more developed than others. He's one that can like talk and all this other stuff. Most of the hybrids can't talk, and so it's like he's the most curious case. And then we meet some other characters later that are hybrids and all this other stuff. But I read the comic book years ago, and man, it just feels so good when you like something and then they do it right. You know, where you like, damn, that's okay. This is even better than the comic, man. I really worried about that when I heard Netflix picked it up, because they were just picking up so much shit. And you're just like, yeah, they might fuck this one off, because this ain't exactly a book with a huge readership. But man, they did it great. I can't wait for season two. Great characters and stuff. I watched them on Amazon. Thought it was excellent. Excellent performances. To me, it was something new. Hadn't really seen the terrorism of Black people in America and horror blended exactly like that. And especially when you throw in the dream of owning a home and the lie that the insidious lie that shit turns out to be in America. I've been listening to podcast interviewing Little Marvin, the dude that was a showrunner, for like the last week, just because I was like so fascinated by how his mind works to really get that shit right. So I enjoyed that a lot. And I want to say that's about it. I started Mayor of Easttown. I haven't finished it yet. I just started like first 10 minutes or so. I really am going to sit down with that, Chris. I know you did the podcast reviewing it.
Yeah.
So I'll definitely check that out. And then the rest of the shit is so nerdy that I don't think y'all even have heard of it. So.
You just save it for the nerd off?
Yeah. Yeah. The rest of the shit is like, yeah, you know, I'm watching Attack on Titan and shit like that. So like,
that's okay. There's no judgment here. You know, I mean, I'm a guy who watched Pretty Little Liars. So how about you, Randolph? What have you been into?
I got into Mayor of Easttown. Because of you and Leah, because I was listening to your podcast and I was kind of half-ass watching it, but y'all's podcast really pulled me into it. So I really got sucked into the deep end.
Cool.
That. So you guys deserve all the credit for that.
You know, cool. No spoilers for Rod.
I kind of spoiled the last one for you. I didn't mean to. I just knew we were watching it at the exact same time. I was like, how are we not watching this at the same time?
I was writing notes. I was obsessively.
You not watching this at the same time as I'm watching it.
Yeah.
You know.
You didn't spoil it, though.
I'm reading Bitter Roots right now.
The comic.
I got them. I ordered them the day of the podcast when we had Rod and Karen on. And I ordered them that day, and they finally came. A couple days ago. So I've been reading those. I haven't been able to really sit with anything, because I'm going to say something I very rarely have to say. I have actually been working a lot. I'm only up to episode 5 through episode 5 Underground Railroad because of that. It's bananas. And then my wife has been out of town, so it's just been me and the baby at home. And she's 13 people. She's just my baby, you know. It's just been me, so I always refer to her as the baby or princessa. So it's just been me and the baby at home, and she had to get her second COVID shot. So I didn't want to go into the office the last couple of days because I'm waiting to see what's going to happen. So I haven't really been able to play bass much lately. I thought I was going to sit down and play quite a bit these last few weeks. Nope, that's been out. I've just been writing a lot. And not for me. We did that show, and I actually now have ideas in my head for new jokes. So I was like, okay, I got to get on this new set.
Yeah.
You know, so now I actually have, that's usually what happens when I do a show that kind of mess my mind, go loose. So, and I've been drinking tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm before we cut it on, before we started, I had to get a Yingling Golden Pilsner because I had some left over for Mayor of Easttown. I wasn't going to drink that much, but, and I was telling you,
is that the cheap beer up here? Cause in Texas, it's like this beer called Lone Star.
I've heard of Lone Star. There's a,
it is a cheap beer.
It's like, it's not bad. Like Yingling is, oh, like they drank Yingling and Rolling Rock on Mayor of Easttown.
Yeah.
And they're not, they're just like American beers, and they're not like, they're not super expensive. I think I bought four tall boys. They were like maybe $4, $5, or $6.
Shit, that's cheap.
Yeah, it's not that, it's not
like
that
much. $1 and change per tall boy.
A blue moon is I think like at least two, I think.
Talk about trying to keep your ass drunk. Jesus.
Yeah. God. Yeah. Yeah.
We just want you drunk and non-functional.
I normally just crack them open when I like do things like this with you guys or yeah. Or a special occasion. I don't really, you know, drink that much, but I guess I've been
I was amped for you because I know that Broadway's open now. They've been talking mad shit about us the last couple weeks on last few days rather on television.
Yeah, we got the word last week. I'm happy that it's coming back. I can earn some money doing what I actually love to do. And hopefully it's the start of something. I don't know how you guys feel being in the ages that we are. A lot of times I feel like I'm just getting started, you know, in a lot of ways. So
yeah, that'll go away.
Oh, it'll go away. Well, I did, you know, before the pandemic hit and everything like that, I felt like I was, right. and then in a lot of ways after things have started to come back, that my standing in my level of the level of respect, I guess, that I have, where I'm able to get on some shows, you know, was good. It's nice to be called, asked to do shows and stuff like that. So that hasn't really died too much, and things are working out. So I'm happy about that. And, you know, just to try to plug on. And like you said, I did some shows last weekend, and I feel inspired to figure some shit out, but I just don't want to bomb on JL's show tomorrow. That's all I'm concerned about.
Oh, you won't. Please.
You'll be fine.
Actually, I listened to every podcast I could find with Barry Jenkins.
Yeah.
This was early.
Yeah.
I listened to a lot of podcasts with Clint Watts. He just released a book about, I just got it. I can't remember the name of it off the head. It's just about black shit.
Okay.
He's a writer for The Atlantic, and he just released all this, a lot of podcasts with him on there. I listen to Rod and Karen, obviously. I listen to you every Sunday when you pop up because I'm usually working out. I listen to you.
Well, that's great. I appreciate it.
Of course.
Well, let's get into this.
But the destination listen for me was Mayor of Easttown.
A lot of people were onto that.
They wanted to come up. Yeah.
Yeah. I reached out to Rod for a little bit of advice, and I always enjoyed, I don't know The Walking Dead, but I know I really loved his, Rod, your Insecure recaps. With Bossy Igby, award winning author, Bossy Igby. And just like said, you know, I want to do something. And I just said, oh, Rod, just what do you think of this and this? And you're like, yeah. And then I just kind of.
The idea was to do the audio from the show at the start. That was pretty sharp.
That was me.
Whoever thought that was pretty sharp. But I was like, oh, shit, we're doing a little bit of a recap of the show. With the
audio. Yeah.
I don't know if you could do that legally. I don't know.
It's just a trailer. It's just a trailer.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a trailer.
They're not going to come get you. Like, no. A little behind the scenes, working with Spotify, we found out that the only time they file claims is if you play 30 seconds of it straight. and it has to be a pretty popular artist.
So okay, yeah.
Because, you know, Spotify will email us like, hey, one of your old episodes got tagged. Y'all, do y'all want to edit it? Do y'all want to take it down? And I just go edit out the shit, whatever it is. Yeah. But I found the trend so far. It's been Kendrick, Lamar, and Drake more than 30 seconds. And I'm just saying we've played a lot of music on our show. just saying.
We took ours down. All the ones with music, we took them down. We didn't
even look around. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't blame you, but just saying, like, if you wanted a little wink, wink, like, well, you know, are we going to get in trouble? If you're playing a lot of Kendrick and Drake, you are. Yeah. But if not, you're probably going to be all right.
My favorite intro of the Mayor of Easttown podcast was Kate Winslet talking about Wawa for like a minute and a half. Mm-hmm. She's just from the UK talking about Wawa and all
that shit. Accent.
Yeah, she's great. But I think she's got some competition. She's got to contend with Underground Railroad. She's got to contend with Thuso Mbedu. Mbedu, I guess that's how you say it. Thuso.
She's British too, though, so they got the little British.
No, she's South African.
Oh, she's got the African. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's one of Trevor Noah's homies.
I don't know if the black South Africans talk with that little funky ass accent that white ones do. I don't know.
It's different. I saw her on Trevor Noah on the Daily Show, and she sounded, you know, like she wasn't from here. You know what I'm saying? Kind of sound, you know, just
T'Challa's father in Black Panther. That actor's South African. He don't talk like that.
Yeah, no, it's a different type of action.
Yeah, the African.
So let's get into this. The Underground Railroad. I'll read the Google blurb. Here we go. After escaping a Georgia plantation, Cora boards a train embarking on a harrowing trip as she seeks true freedom while being hunted by a notorious slave catcher. I want to briefly say a couple of things, and then I'll throw it to you, Rod, first. I don't know what that was. That was a noise. I'm going to say that, you know, I am a Barry Jenkins stan. I've been a fan of his since Medicine for Melancholy. I've gone on both of your podcasts and several others talking about how great that movie is. And I think Barry Jenkins is a genius. And we'll get into the reasons why with this one, but I can immediately tell that this is a great series, a great piece of art, because our friend J.O. Covan just thought it was okay. So, and you know, but Bo Burnham is...
If Bo was in it, I think he would have raised the grade a little bit.
Yeah, if Bo Burnham was an ally or even better, if he was a slave master, I think J.O. would have loved this.
I did watch that. That was what I meant to say, that I couldn't remember. There was something I couldn't remember when you said we've been watching. Yeah. I did watch that Bo Burnham special.
I did too. What did you think?
I
give it a solid B. You know,
he's good. He's a talented
dude. Just in case JL is listening, I give it a solid B. Yeah. B minus.
I give it a probably get A minus B plus range.
If I'm being 100% serious, I really thought it was amazing. Like I really, that shit felt like the future. You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, here's something only this motherfucker can do.
Right.
Like, that's the thing that I be telling comedians whenever they talk, they let these white people talk them out of doing what the fuck they need to be doing. You know, mm-hmm. Why ain't y'all talking about rings? You know, and get up there and, you know, talk about it. And I'm like, lean into what makes you special, and then nobody else on the planet will be able to imitate it. And that's what he did. He leaned all the way into his bag of music, editing, YouTube, genius. Social media. I was like, this nigga, and like you get to the end credits, and that shit is just like Bo Burnham. I was like, that motherfucker a beast. That white boy did that shit, bro.
Yeah, I really liked
the first song.
Well,
I didn't get to the first song.
Yeah, you just gotta, I don't know what to tell you, but you just gotta truck through it.
That's the first song. And I was like, okay, I see what he's doing. And then I just was like, doesn't interest me.
Yeah, it's not for everybody.
It got me, bro. Especially the commentary on our social media and the internet. That shit is so relevant.
Here's what it made me think about, though. Mm-hmm. It made me think about how people, I'm not saying any names or anything, but I'm sure you can attach a face to these, to what I'm about to say. It made me
use a Randolph Terrence.
It made me think about how people will decide that something that they're watching that's not in the normal vein of comedy, well, that shit.
Right.
But this thing, this guy that I like, this thing that he's doing that's not in the normal vein of comedy, oh, this is great.
I thought about that too.
And we probably were thinking of the same person.
It made me think about how people shat on the net, and but this is genius. And I was just kind of like, they both are taking comedy, making it their own thing. It's basically a one-man show. And if you can appreciate it, I don't know why you can't appreciate the other one, you know?
Right. Well, when I looked at it, I said, okay, this is not really a comedy special.
Right.
So it's not, a stand-up special, so it's not what I like. He's doing a one-man show. As soon as I saw, he's doing a one-man show.
That's okay, how I took it.
Well, I don't really fuck with one-man shows like that anymore. I mean, I did. It depends on the person and stuff like that. I recognize Bo Burnham's skill in artistry. It's just not for me.
Yeah,
that's okay. What I find interesting is how people shit on these things for this person, but you don't shit on it for this person. But you don't like this person, but you don't like this. I don't like what this person does. This, I'm going to make a video mocking this person. You know,
that's a great point. And like, I did think it several times.
It's all the same shit. Yeah.
I think I know who you're talking about. message me who it is. But
Sarah Cooper had her special this year, last year too. That was I can't do stand up, so I'm gonna do all this other shit.
That to me was a little bit of cheating, though, because every fucking
but you know my point being
works in this vein.
Yeah, so my point being like people trying to lean into what makes them special and different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Working to various degrees is my point.
That
I watched all three of these and I thought Bo Burnham was the one that
Bo is super talented. You can't do that. He's super talented.
Yeah, he's a really talented dude.
He really gave me a. Were you, Chris? You a fan of Flight of the Conchords at all, or
I did like it. Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of gave me vibes of like, damn, like Flight of the Conchords is that kind of like comedy music that's good enough that it crosses over into like, damn, I actually like this song.
Mm-hmm.
And Bo was able to do that a few times.
That Boom King song they do. Who's the Boom King?
Yeah, who's the Boom King? Like they're just good enough that where they cross right over and you just be in there brushing your teeth one day, like, I'm the Boom King. You're like, what did that happen?
Yeah.
That song's pretty good.
Yeah, Bo Burnham did that. I woke up today humming some of the songs and shit, thinking like, you know, damn, that dude's really good. I had never fucked with him before this, so
I liked his last one. Yeah, I liked his last one, and then this to me is the best I've seen of his. And then I went and looked at Chris Rock's intro to his Total Blackout. He remixed his special, and I was like, yeah, I don't like what he. I think Chris Rock should have kept Tambourine like it was.
Mm.
And I just I loved how it just like that intro for. Cause he felt like he had to come out to Kendrick Lamar, but that fucking Thundercat intro with the back of his head and just I was like that was perfect. That was that was enough.
That's almost got a really good eye.
Yeah, like he knows like
he's a really good vision of what he wants to do.
Yeah, he just like knows what to do. So yeah, I mean hats off to him, man. He's a talented motherfucker. I was trying to figure out who he was, his basketball equivalent would be. In a comedy game.
Probably like, I mean, I hate to say the obvious, but probably Luca, right?
But see, I was thinking that. I was thinking that.
And that's the go-to. I was actually gonna say Bird.
I was gonna say Carlin was Bird.
Yeah.
Carlin's a Larry Bird, but like
he's the new guy.
So I was trying to think American white guy, but
Joker, Luca,
Rosin Petrovich.
But
yeah, there are no good American white guys.
Yeah. So it's like, who are you? Because Gordon Hayward, I mean,
definitely better than Kevin Love and Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, so,
yeah.
You got to give him Luka. That's a bad white boy.
Yeah. So that's what I was thinking too. That's what I was thinking. Because anytime you're gonna pull up in the bubble on the Black Lives Matter sticker and hit a three,
yeah,
and a buzzer beater, I'm like, yo, he don't care.
That's a bad white boy.
He ain't from here.
And as my dad said,
he said, y'all lives don't matter.
and as my dad said on Sunday, he said, he got some of y'all in him, don't he?
Yeah. Hey, look, he said, hey, in this fourth quarter, y'all lives don't matter right now. You get off this court, we right back to your lives matter. But I'm giving you buckets tonight.
He's from some other shit.
Yeah.
You can tell too.
We diverged a little bit, but that's what we do on the show. But no, that was me. I asked you guys a question. I brought it up, but I think, you know, that's how one of the main reasons how we know this is a great work of art. But I want you, Rod, to just speak on some of the things that stood out for you, things that you liked about it.
So, all right. So for me, I liked it. I wasn't blown away by it as I was with Moonlight and even Bill Street, to be honest, dude. That shit was, I mean, it's hard, it's heavy. You probably ain't gonna watch it twice, but everyone in that cast, everyone in that's the script. For this one, I think this is a point of preference. I like my Black trauma and slavery narratives. I like them a little more straightforward. You know what I'm saying? So Barry he likes to play with the camera, play with the ethereal versus the like reality. And so sometimes I would get lost and I would think like, is this my fault? Am I fucking... like, did something happen and all this shit? But you get used to that probably like 2-3 episodes in.
Yeah.
And by the end, once I just understood, like, sometimes he's going to get a little, what's the best way to, just ethereal with the plot, where he's just like, does it really matter how they got from point A to point B? The point is they're at point B now. Mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, you threw me in the middle of that. You know, a little sensory awareness. I think I'm supposed to feel a little overwhelmed at times, you know, like, cause that's how the slaves would have felt, you know, being in these new environments, not knowing what's going on. So I appreciated that. He hit the notes with the casting, some of the acting performances. Really love the way that he does dialogue. So it's not just message, you know, like,
yeah,
something about that shit feels more real. Like when they were in South Carolina and the one dude that was just so unprepared to be an ally.
Yeah.
Like, he's just like, I'm sorry. I'm like, that's about right. Yeah.
He's the racist dude.
Right. Yeah. I was shocked.
I caught that too.
Wasn't we all waiting on the turn? I said, so when he gone? Like, she's like, they down there, doing eugenics. I'm like waiting on him to be like, well, nigga. It's about time you knew. But I really thought it was good. I love the elements of like suspense that he was able to put in there. I love that he didn't shrink away from the trauma of it. I thought a lot of the reviews made it sound like he would, and I get why some people like that shit, but I'm like,
what he said.
Yeah, I was like, you then he wouldn't be telling the story. And then I heard him on Black on the Air, and I was like, clearly this man didn't make something that ran away from. It was kind of like, hey, if you don't want to watch it, fine, but I can't tell the story without showing these things. And I like that he did that. In some kind of harrowing fashion, man. I know people are gonna talk about episode one, but for me, when they got to North Carolina and they had a whole row of trees of just slaves that have been hanged and shit. And that's just, those white people walk by that every day.
Mm-hmm. Right. Happily.
Happily. Yeah. Skipping down the street, kids, everything.
That shit looked like some Game of Thrones shit.
Didn't it? The Joel Edgerton looks like he's gonna be on my list this year as, you know, my special Oscar that I'm petitioning to get done, the white person playing a racist Oscar.
You think he's going to take the place of the dude that was in the Shield, who was also in Django Unchained, and he was in...
Oh, now see, that's the Hall of Fame.
Redhead,
so, I think we're talking about two different things. We're talking about the annual Oscar.
Oh.
Now, the bust is probably going to be of Walton Goggins.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And Walter Scoggins, that dude. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Like, when you get the trophy, it probably is going to be his face. You know what I'm saying? Just a sculpture of him, because it's like that nigga, he does that, okay?
That is his role.
Joel is up there. He probably will, he'll definitely be one of the finalists. Him, the woman from Them will be on there. I know we still got a lot of the year left, but like, he played the shit out of that racist, okay? Mm-hmm. Very complicated. The fact that he was rebelling against his own father.
Yeah. Which I'm just through.
That changes that whole narrative of the kids will save us, right? That motherfucker's like, no, they won't. And then, of course, man, I can't even mention this show without bringing up the kid Chase Dillon, Homer, who played Homer.
Yeah.
That little boy. I mean, every black person in the earth that watched this wanted to kill that little black boy.
He was strangling that little motherfucker. It's like, just wrap my TV hands right around now. His throat.
Didn't you? And so anyway, the point being, I really liked it. I thought it did a good job of being compelling and without truly trying to soften the blow of like who these people were. And I love how much rope Barry gives his actors to just like fill the roles. You can tell there's a lot of freedom in being in a Barry Jenkins project, which is man, it was really refreshing to see how much he trusted the people. And this was his best use of the camera pointed at someone's face for 15 seconds. Mm. This is his best use of that, because every time he did it, it was in reference to something like this person, like someone is thinking about this person, and then they show that person's face. And in a cast this big with this many episodes, that was actually on point. Like, other people should probably try to adopt that, so that, because you know, in other times it's like, well, that's just like Wilhelmina. I'm like, who the fuck was Wilhelmina? What episode was that? Let me stop this and Google. And with this is just like, oh yeah, her homegirl from episode one. So great job overall.
What about you, Randolph?
Like I said, I'm five episodes in, so I'm halfway through. So I told y'all from the first one he had me. Like from the first one, boom, he had me. Episode one, he had me. Each one builds. Each episode builds the next episode, builds the next episode. I kind of like the way he has started episodes, just like what the fuck is happening? Like episode four, who the fuck is this young kid? Who is this young white boy? What the fuck is he doing? You know, and then you realize, oh shit, that's Edgerton. You know, that's, oh fuck. That was when he was a kid. You know, I like the way he does that, because it's not so much you have to pay attention. It forces you to pay attention to the storyline, but you better pay attention to the storyline.
Yeah.
You can't be checking in and out, in and out, in and out. Mm-hmm. You gotta be with it. You know, I listened to an interview where he said he wanted to give people space where you could watch one and walk away. So each one is shot almost independently of the other one. So you can watch this one and you can walk away. You can come back and watch another one and you can walk away for a couple of days to allow yourself to process it. I thought, it's hard finding goodness in the white people of this show, mm-hmm. which is very timely for that period of history. You know, you got the one or the two, or you got his father, the ally who was running the Underground Railroad. But other than that, you know, at least up to this, you're like, is no one decent in this motherfucker? The guy that was at the house on the third episode, who had him in the attic, but his wife was a horrific human being, you know, and everybody in the town were horrific human beings in North Carolina. Everybody in the town were horrific human beings, but this one man was a good person for whatever reason. I also liked how the fact that he never gives you the why, except for, you know, the cat chasing her. That's the only one you get, and you really don't even get the why. Why did you turn like that? Like, your parents were decent and you chose this path. Why, for money? So you could buy a waistcoat?
And the dude in North Carolina, the dude in North Carolina, what was interesting about him is he inherited the Underground Railroad shepherdship from his father, from his own father.
Right, right.
And couldn't have, like, it was a legacy he never wanted.
Yeah, and he couldn't,
you know what I mean? He couldn't
hack it, but he believed in what his father believed in.
Right.
I mean, he believed in it.
But didn't want to pay that cost.
But he couldn't hack it. You know, if he could have hacked it, he probably could have figured out a way to do shit correctly. Also, if you're serious about it, you don't marry a woman like that. Mm-hmm. Just, this is what we're doing, and you ain't gonna be with it, so I can't marry you.
It's literally just the compromises that whiteness demands.
Maybe that's what we're supposed to be noticing.
Yeah.
The compromises of the whole,
like, in order to exist in that ecosystem in North Carolina, he needed to have all the appearances of a slaver and a bigot, because North Carolina was so racist you couldn't even have slaves.
Yeah,
like that was, we just kill black people.
We'll just kill them.
Yeah, so you need to have
on by the side of the road
to fit in the social circles. You need to have all the makings of that.
Right.
When he tried to philosophically basically be like, we're getting kind of hard on this whole slave thing, ain't we? You see how quick he was to back down off of that shit.
Right.
And in
his own, but I understand the backing down. He's like, if I at least don't appear to back down from this,
mm-hmm.
at least verbally, they'll fucking kill us.
Yeah.
Because they clearly show they'll kill any motherfucker here. They don't give a fuck. Like, if you're willing to not get with this program, we're killing your ass.
Y'all can live in my attic forever.
You know, and that's another thing. I was like, what's the plan, dog? They just gonna stay in the attic?
Forever.
That's the plan. You gotta get them the fuck out of there. You gotta get them out of there.
That was some Anne Frank shit.
Yeah, like, you gotta get them out of there. But he also didn't have a partner who could help him develop a plan.
Right.
Yeah. It's interesting that they, in the book, we don't have the Grace character who eventually is named Fanny Briggs, who's a character from another book, The Intuitionist. Coulson's, like, I think that might be his first novel. Mm-hmm. That came out in 99. She was a character that, a slave who taught herself how to read. And then The Intuitionist, a building is named after her. So that was an interesting thing, because you think, you know, she's up there, and when they set the house on fire and your heart breaks,
right.
And then you find out in, I believe, episode 7. Yeah. When she, you know, it's revealed that she got out. So that was,
and it's the shortest episode.
Yeah.
Episode 7. It's kind of a palate cleanser in that second half of the show. And then, listening to the interviews, Barry talks about how basically the manifestation of the Underground Railroad is about your own state of blockage or unblockness and stuff. So the idea of having this young black girl who I guess was young enough to truly optimistically dream of freedom, she just breezes through the Underground Railroad in 17 minutes. Like, she just walks out of the house, walks into the same place we saw get dynamited, gets on a train, has a short conversation, is on her way to freedom. Right. And that said a lot, because that meant that Cora, a lot of her shit was blocked in herself.
Yeah, well, maybe once you make the decision, it becomes easy.
Right.
It's because of the trauma of her thinking that her mother abandoned her.
Right.
And it's like Mabel, who's her mother, played by Sheila Ateem. And that's, to me, that's obviously, slavery is bad, but I mean, that was the real tragedy. She thought her mother left her, but she was coming back for her. She got bit by a snake and died. And then that's Ridgway's white whale, because that's the only slave he didn't catch.
Yeah.
And bring back. So,
and what it, and I love so much of the commentary about with all these pieces, but especially what the white supremacy and the suppression does to us, and then what we take on for ourselves. Cause that was a lot with Cora, was like, she was a fighter, but she also was like, she was so, she never knew when she could stop fighting.
Right.
You know, even when they got to that village with the black people in the north, and like the white people come to check to yeah. like talk to the about the wine, and she just takes off running. You're just like, dog, that PTSD, bro. Like,
yeah,
you just never believe you're free, man. It reminds me of Harriet, the movie from 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And she gets the I think it's Philly, and Buddy just tells her, like, if listen, I see how you walking, I know where you coming from. It was another black person. It was a bunch of white people around. He said, listen, if you want to be free, you got to walk like you free. Mm-hmm. And that was like such a big thing. And then in this, you kind of see that with the way that Cora, like her body language, shout out to Thuso. She was fucking acting. Her body as an instrument was just because, you know, Barry loved him, a nonverbal main character. Mm-hmm. So her body as an instrument was amazing. He loves
any shot where you ain't talking, you just looking.
Yeah, he loved that.
He loves that shot. He's real good. He's real good at shooting them shots. Like,
yeah.
No, no, don't talk. Just look over there. Pensively.
The griot didn't seem to get it.
They don't understand it.
What'd they say?
They didn't like her acting.
What?
Yeah, they didn't. Fuck well, one guy didn't, but yeah, you know,
whatever.
But they, you know, it, whatever. I agree with you guys. I mean, one of the things that stuck, I mean, just aesthetically, it's beautiful. The cinematography is great. James Laxton, his longtime collaborator, the score from Nicholas Britell.
The casting director is. Did an outstanding job.
Yeah,
of casting
fucking Americans.
And by the way, I know we take it for granted at this point, but I also have to point out, beautifully shot. Like,
yeah,
nobody gonna light your skin like Barry. He gonna take care of you.
And yeah. James Laxton is white, so and you know what I mean. Like he did Moonlight also. He did Medicine, you know.
White people worked on this? I'm disgusted.
He got a black wife, man.
Yeah.
He got an eye for it. He got an eye for that skin. He got a black wife.
You know, it just, one of the things that, you know, especially the interviews really brought it home to me is just like, and I always felt this too, and I'm writing about this in my stand-up, you know, but it just made me appreciate my ancestors. It made me proud of like all the stuff we've gone through, like, and you know, I think it's just more pronounced in this. I like the elements of joy that were embedded in the film too, even though they were slaves. You know, they said these niggas are partying too, having too much fun, it's revelry. Yeah. You know, they still had this joy that, you know, could not be squashed. And then and it was just like, it's beautiful when you think about it. Like,
yeah, it's weird for me because I did not, and maybe I'll watch it again, but I didn't pick up on the joy part of it.
Just the parts where there was some lightness, you know, as far as like
the tears hotter together
in the first episode. Mm-hmm. You know, they're, you know, the singing and dancing and the everydayness of it all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fucking horrible, but I saw elements of that in the film.
Like I said, I could see it as just a me thing because I've seen that in a lot of the discussion about it. And for me, I don't know, it was like this underpinning of just sheer terror underneath everything.
Oh yeah, well,
that would not allow me to even the parts where they tried to, you know, it's like this is a love story. I was like, a love story with these motherfucking masses in the background. This shit ain't no, like, it was like,
right,
it was
right.
Like, you know what, you know, more like, it felt like a fight for joy. Like, we were, like, even your joy was a fight. It was a revolution.
It was, but I think that's what makes it so beautiful is that we fight for every inch against immeasurable odds. And we're still able to find something for ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always think of like Antoine Fisher. It's like, you couldn't break me. Yeah. You know, I always think like that.
Yeah.
It
didn't feel relieving to me in the way that it seemed for other folks. And No. It didn't feel like it was like new territory or new ground. It felt like, you know, we've seen it before, but, and I think it's just the way I watch all these type of stories where I'm like, yeah, but what the fuck they about to do about this? Cause they hate seeing us smile. So what's the next fight we got to be preparing for in the next scene? Cause I know it's some bullshit about to happen. Cause niggas was dancing. Here we go.
And I don't say that to say that it didn't run parallel to me wondering when the other shoe was going to drop, especially when you get to Indiana. And I was just like, when is it going to happen? Cause even though the show, like, it was, to me, you know, it was very episodic where I was like, I got to see what happened next. I mean, I was excited to, I consume this like voraciously.
Me too.
And when I got to Indiana, it was just like, oh boy. And I read the book. I read the book in 2019. Oh,
okay. Is it because you read the book that you knew Indiana was going to be a bitch, or did you just?
Yeah. And then okay. Just being black a little bit. Yeah.
But because I didn't read the book and I knew.
So five, when he's telling her the story of what happened to Lovey.
Yeah,
and she tried to take herself out in the lake. I was like, this is pretty fucking heavy, right?
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, like you Bruh. Know, it's
this is pretty fucking. this is pretty fucking heavy,
and right? That was some acting right there, boy. Yeah. God damn.
And once again, let me just get on your face right here. You know what? I need you to not move.
Yeah,
just listen to what.
Yeah, just remember, you're horrified, disgusted. You wish you could kill him, but you can't. And also, you're in despair and depressed.
Yeah. You know your girl has been brutalized and killed. And action.
Yep.
And you know the whole, like, there's a lot of bars in it too. Like I just rewatched it today. Mm-hmm. Like not the whole thing, but I maybe rewatch on episode maybe 3 or 4. And the bars, episode 2 right now is like my favorite episode. Because episode 1 is definitely a foundation, but the whole experimenting on the black people there and
episode 2.
Yeah,
and the whole thing. The what I liked about episode 2 was the mystery of it, of figuring it out. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, there's no black children. Why aren't there any black children? White children, why aren't there any black children?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, she's what? And it's like, and you get to the part where, like, you have the woman who's teaching them, Lucille Madison. She has a conversation with Ridgeway when he comes to visit. And she's like, oh, that's a noble profession. And then Ridgeway's like, seems like we're both doing our part to get rid of these niggas. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's like game recognizes game. Like,
yeah, well, Ridgeway knew what was happening there.
Yeah.
We still didn't know what was happening. Right. We had kind of figured it out.
Yeah.
We weren't 100% yet.
And that's why it was always giving me notes of, like, almost like a horror movie or a suspense thriller. Cause that's one of those episodes where if you ain't paying no damn attention,
right?
If you ain't smart, you probably is watching that shit like, look at this, slaves in love. See, cause we did have love. I'm like, do you not see the motherfuckers going in the doctor's office in the background? This is not good.
Right.
Yeah.
When she put it together with the kids, as soon as she put it together, I put it together. I was like, there's no black children.
Why aren't there? Me too, bro. Once again, rooted in actual history.
I hadn't seen any children. I hadn't seen any white children either. And I was telling and I was like, well, there should be black children there, shouldn't there?
Yeah. Rooted in actual history.
Yeah.
Right. So.
There's a
history that is repeating itself at our border right now.
There's a great
shout out to North Carolina, my home state.
My parents are from there. I got roots there. Yeah.
Just 5-6 years ago, just paid out a settlement.
That's where black people who have my last name came from. Mm-hmm. The plantation.
The bar that Caesar drops in this episode, the nigger shall not prosper lest he prosper in the white man's vision of him.
We see a lot of that happening today.
Depilatory. I said, oh shit,
what is that? Depilatory.
I said, this brother know he about to die.
Like, you about to die, you don't even care. I thought the same thing. I was like, yeah, die. You're going, like, let me just get this in before.
Yeah.
I mean, you definitely have to be in a mood to watch it, in a certain state of mind to watch it. But
yeah,
I think it's almost like it's not as explicit as maybe them or Lovecraft, but there's definitely the science fiction element to me as far as the train is concerned. And
well, that's what I would say. I would not label this science fiction.
No, right? I don't think it is.
I would label this maybe fantasy.
Yeah.
More than sci-fi, because sci-fi feels like you got to go back and kind of like explain some like this is how we got here and this is how this works. I think with fantasy, you don't have to do that as much. And I think that's where the show excelled, is being like, so when we say Underground Railroad, it's this is what it's going to feel like. I think it's episode 9 where she literally goes in this Underground Railroad station and meets all these people. And you're just like, oh, they are fleshing this fantasy out, but they never explain it to you. They just kind of flesh it, like, you know, pick up what you can pick up, put down what you can put down. Some of it might be a dream, some of it might be real. Yeah, and then obviously them is horror, so you know, horror has its own explanation and shit. But it felt like a completely different, like it was trying to accomplish a different goal. Like, whereas them, part of it is this like tribute to like slasher horror and Saw and shit like that. That's not what this is trying to do. You know,
oh no, it's not. It's Chris, not. But
the,
I just
Chris, you read the book. Is the book fantasy or is it science fiction? Because it seems like the book is a fantasy. Just right off the bat, the Underground Railroad is an actual train underground.
Yeah,
that's a fantasy.
It just took that like that childlike wonder of like, you know, I'm sure you've heard Barry talk about it in the interviews where he said, you know, he literally thought it was an underground railroad.
Yeah, right. So that's fantasy based on seeing his father dressed and going to work. And, you know,
it was light. It was like a light version of like the fantasy, but it was, you know, steeply grounded in the reality of slavery, of what America was, you know, back then. And it just told in third person perspective.
I wanted to mention another actor performance that was amazing, Jasper. So when they get captured and they're coming back, that brother, oh my God. Like he embodied that character, like the stole the show, literally. Like just you're watching it and you're just like, best supporting. There you go. Like I don't like just give it to him now.
Definitely that episode.
It's going to be, well, Calvin Lee Smith played Jasper, but I think if you give a best supporting actor, it's going to, it might, if Joel Edgerton.
Going to be Homer.
He might be best supporting.
He's fucking bananas.
You might have to, like, William Jackson Harper might be best supporting actor.
Yeah. You said William Jackson Harper, Royal?
I mean, William Jackson Harper.
I can see that, but it's got, if it's a black person, it's got to be Homer for me.
Yeah.
That little motherfucker stole the goddamn show, boy.
Yeah, I'm like, I want to break him in.
Right. Like, if I see that little nigga in real life, might be a problem.
Yeah.
Like, how you 10 looking 40 in some scenes? Like,
bastard.
When he goes
like, he looked like a little African man. Didn't he look like the little African man? I was like, he's that little African.
Episode 2, when they're at that museum gig and he walks up and just tries to snatch Cora out.
Just try to snatch her out. And then I'm like, you're a 10-year-old.
That fucking asshole proprietor was like and he tried to improv. And the slave, the little child is trying to get his mother. And it's like, you motherfucker.
Oh, dog. The scene for me was dude was gonna rape Cora, but he stops because Ridgeway comes back too soon.
Yeah.
And then the dude is acting up at the fire later. And then Homer comes over to Ridgeway and he's just like, I seen him trying to escond with one of the slaves there with an eye towards indecency.
Yes.
He said he said an eye towards indecency. And he gave him that look. I said, oh, that white man is dead.
He gonna have to, it's a lot of great performances in here.
Yeah.
That episode just reminded me of this play with Andre Brower, this play called A Human Being of a Sort, where this is 1906, but it's like when a black prisoner is leased to the Bronx Zoo to serve as a special attendant at a controversial exposition in 1906, he is surprised to learn it features a Congolese boy put on display among
true story.
Yeah, among the inmates of the primate house. That's the play that I went to see in 2019, and it was fucking, it was great. Like, it was just like, this is a human being, but they think you've got them on display like an animal, and that's basically, man,
and that's the thing that we see on display now. We see it on display all through this miniseries.
Yeah,
we see it on display all across our society. Is the wanton brutality?
Yep,
physically and mentally, just the brutality that's displayed time after time after time, and we are asked to just be like, "Oh, that's okay,"
right?
Yeah,
that's all right. well, you know, it's just how it goes. You know, it's okay.
Yeah. What'd you think about Mac?
The kid, the guy that grew up to be the
he jumped down the well.
Jumped down the well.
Ends up being the apprentice to his father.
He moved
more of a son to Ridgeway's father than Ridgeway was.
Yeah,
and then that scene where he was gonna kill Ridgeway.
Was a decent person, was a decent human. Ridgeway's father was a man who happened to be white versus a white man.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he was already could see through that bullshit.
Yeah,
he was like, man, this ain't God. Like, the great fire.
You know what kind of house you were raised in.
Yeah.
Right.
Don't break my heart. You know your heart was already broken.
He wanted that suit.
Gone.
He wanted that fresh suit, dog.
He didn't have the skills that the other black people that worked for him did. Worked for his dad did.
Well, maybe if y'all asked him, resented.
I know. He
moved around the fucking house.
Hey, man, they made an episode about it. They made a whole movie about it in Cruella. So I'm just telling you.
At a part where he apologize to Mac.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he talked, well, not even really apologize, just acknowledges what he did was wrong, and he always felt bad about that shit. Like, Ridgeway was complicated. Like, he was fucked up, but complicated. He was, and once again, I like when they do that. Don't make, you know, I love Quentin Tarantino's Django, many bars, great, but it's a white man's imagination of slavery. So his characters like Calvin Candy are just so fucking like, I'm evil, you know what I'm saying? I just hate niggas, you know. And with this one, I like the complexity of a motherfucker that in his heart he thought he had love for Mac. He regretted what he did for Mac. He wanted the respect of his father, who was a clearly anti-slavery. And yet, the allure of whiteness and capitalism it was too strong. Being white is too strong.
The thing I liked was, I never liked, that was my problem with the Joker movie. Look, don't try to get me to like the fucking villain.
Right.
I'm not going to like the villain. You've spent years telling me to not like the villain, and now you want me to like that. Oh, no. This is, he's misunderstood. I don't want to misunderstand.
Have you seen the girl version?
I promise you being complicated, you know, because all people are complicated, but don't be trying to get me to like the motherfucker.
Right.
And they never try to get you to like Richard.
Right.
Like, he's a horrible human being. Don't think he's not, you know.
Yeah, it's a really, Barry Jenkins has, for those, he has a really, like, what I call a sterile lens. You know what I mean? Where it's just like a surgeon. It's antiseptic almost. Like, this is just a slice of this person's life, good and bad, everything. This is just what makes them. You, the audience, take that in and you see what you're dealing with, as opposed to like, look how evil this motherfucker is. Like, I already get it. He catches slaves for a living. Right, like, you don't gotta, I'm never gonna walk away from this thinking he's a good guy. So if you want to tell me how you get to be this fucked up, I'm with you. I want to see that.
I don't mind it either. And Rod the Griot didn't like that either.
What?
Didn't like what? Yeah. That part?
Yeah, they didn't like that they spent time on Ridgeway. That you cast somebody like Joel Edgerton in a role, and who's like the second lead on the TV show, and that you spend time with that guy.
This is reminding me of this horrible review of them that I want to say maybe is in Slade or Vulture, and it's just so personalized. And it's this black person taking down black art for white people's paycheck. And I'm like, fam, why? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's one line where she says, you know, basically it stole and rips off these other movies. And I'm like, what's the difference between that and when Jordan Peele pays homage to these other movies that are ours? His entire steez is like, look at this movie. It's actually from this movie. Look at this clip. Oh, look at the background. You see these DVDs? This is all the influences for this scene. And it's like, so one guy's ripping people off and the other guy's paying homage. It's just like, this is a very personalized attack on this person. And I hate when they do that, man, because you know Barry didn't go into this wanting, he didn't become a coon. He didn't start this show and say, all of a sudden, guys, I hate black people. I'm a hack. I just hire actors for no reason. I want you to love the white man in this movie. Like, you know he didn't do that. Yeah. So why are you writing that?
Apropos of nothing, something he's never done ever.
Yeah.
In all these movies, you know. He's had likable white characters in movies. This character ain't even likable.
No.
He's terrible.
And Beale Street had a likable white character in the Jewish man that was going to rent the building, rent the apartment to him. Uh-huh. This guy's not even likable.
None of the white people are likable in this shit.
This is who he is, and this is how he got here. That's all I'm trying to tell you.
His dad is the only likable white dude in this whole
thing. The only one who seems to be a man who happens to be white. He's the only one.
Get the fuck out of here, man.
The rest of them, horrible human beings.
What does it say when we do it for a black publication? The same thing before a black publication.
Man, I just always feel like a lot of that stuff is internalized shame. I don't know how else. I don't say this to be pejorative. I say it because I looked within my own self and found it and was like, I got to exercise this shit. You know what I mean? Like every time we talk about this, it's going to be some black people that think we're doing this to attack them or we're doing this to demean blackness or whatever. It's like, no. And it should be up to each individual creator to do the shit the way they want. And we opt in and out of what we feel like watching. If you don't want to watch
don't forget, some of it is people doing it because there's money in it.
Well, that too, yeah.
There's a steady check in that. There's a steady check. Money will find you if you're willing to do that.
That's true.
I just try not to get angry. Modicum of
talent, money will find you.
I try not to get angry by it. I mean,
yeah. I try not to, Chris, but it's anger inducing because of the purposeful obfuscation of the points that these pieces are making. That's what bothers me, is because a lot of stuff is farmed out to black people now. And what happens is, in lieu of watching it, people will read that and then that becomes a narrative. That's what happened to them. Thank God that's not what happened to Barry Jenkins, you know, because there were more black people that liked it than, you know, than people that got to it first. But I've seen it derailed Harriet at the box office. It's something that's very insidious to me, and it makes me angry because we've waited our whole lives.
Yeah,
some of these people have waited their whole lives to finally tell our version of the events. And then you finally get, you know how fucking hard it is to get a movie made? You get the shit done, and then some asshole just decides, I'm tired of sick slave movies, and then they go write some shit that makes it seem like Cassie Clemons fucking hates black people. And it's like, you didn't need to do that, man. That's you don't have any integrity.
I like how you brought, why you brought the, I like that you brought this up, because I was watching today. I believe it was Hollywood Reporters Roundtable. They had TV showrunners. Mm-hmm. They had Barry Jenkins, Misha Green, Katori Hall, Ethan Hawke, and the guy who's a showrunner for The Crown. Mm-hmm. And the moderator asked, "What is something that you want to make that you haven't been able to make?" And Barry Jenkins was like, "We're making it now. We're making this stuff now. We're able to do it." So, you know,
that's one of the reasons that people need to think of this shit holistically, man. When you say shit like, first of all, it's never true. So number one, but it's never, ever going to be true either, where all they make is black slave movies. Okay. I would love the year. I would love it. The year where I look at the box office and be like, we ain't made nothing but black slave movies this year. Yeah. Wow. Look at all these black people that finally got to make their to talk about their trauma in front of the world that we never get to talk. That ain't never happened. We get like one every 3 years.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, that's enough.
Right. If you're lucky.
Yeah. And we just got to the point where it's not directed by a white person.
Right.
Yeah.
Just like what, 5-10 years now?
Right.
We've been able to have black stories where it's like, I would like to explain to myself.
Tell the story. Yeah.
Yeah. Because up until then, it's been like, I hope a white director picks this up and maybe get some black consultants. So, you know, that shit is like, that shit is infuriating. Maybe Steven
Spielberg can get behind this, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe Brad Pitt will produce it. Is Brad one of
Didn't Brad produce this?
Yeah.
Yes. It's hard to get this shit made. So this idea that like Hollywood is forcing black people to make this, like if you went and talked to most of these directors, probably when they were just getting out of school and be like, what's your dream project? It's going to be some black shit. It's going to be something black.
It's like Colson Whitehead won the Pulitzer for this and Barry Jenkins signed on, which means a lot of people liked it. And then Barry Jenkins and who just fresh off an Oscar win is like, I want to make a adaptation out of this thing that won the Pulitzer.
Pulitzer Prize winning story. Yes.
Exactly. So
this is the culmination of several black dreams.
Right. Yeah.
And someone at the Grill went and wrote that hit piece on it. Yeah. And damn it, it make you want to just be like, why'd you do that?
Yeah.
They got a check.
Because I try not to like look at reviews and stuff, but like everybody else, masterpiece, masterpiece, masterpiece. The Griots, whether I'm sure they liked it,
right.
And some of them might have been scared to say anything different, but for the most part, people really liked it. Let me see what it is on Rotten Tomatoes. But the Griot was like, no.
What is Shadow and X say?
I don't know. I unfollowed them.
And you just stopped following them completely. Yeah. I don't really fuck with them too much myself because of this, because they're exactly like the Griot.
Yeah.
Shadow Knight
does that thing that I laugh at it now, but they do this thing where all the news until it's made is great.
Yeah.
Oh, they cast this person. Oh, so and so is writing. This black person's directing. Oh, this black person's producing. Hey, look at this clip. This is a trailer. And then as soon as the shit comes out, first of all, it's very traumatizing. Aren't we sick of black people doing this in movies? I'm like, bitch, you're the one I'm watching it for.
You've
been telling me for 5 years, get excited about this book getting optioned. And now it's out, and we're supposed to be like, this is disgusting.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Snowfall is must-see TV, but that's not black trauma.
Bro,
and I love Snowfall. Don't get me wrong.
I love Snowfall. It. That was a big one for me.
Yeah.
Like this was my breakthrough year, man. I started looking at the way shit was lining up online, like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I've been watching black. Y'all make appointment viewing out of black people killing each other every Thursday.
Fuck with that Godfather of Harlem.
Every Thursday,
bro, I got it on. I got it. I bought it. I bought the season, so I'm on that.
Underground Railroad 95% on the Rotten Tomatoes.
Right there,
79% average audience
score.
Yeah,
but you got to remember, like, a lot of that's just racist white people,
right?
That's true. That's
like, go look at the Amazon reviews. I think we did it on Three Guys On, and you could just see one star. I'm sick of this.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that does get me mad, and I try to avoid it, but try to like watch it for myself. But
it leaks through, man. We're in the content age, and honestly, they put it out there so we will see it, Chris.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? Like, they write their review, and they know it stands out. And you know, some like with the one that was about them, I went and looked at the comments, and there were people in the comments, like black people, being like, nah, this is unfair. Like, it's okay to not like it, but some of the stuff you said was just very unfair.
You could not like it.
Yeah.
Make shit up about it.
Yeah. And there's a bunch of black shit I don't like. I don't have to then turn around and lie on it. It's just, I didn't like it. It happens.
Why didn't you like it? Well, I don't like it for this and this and this.
Yeah.
This and this.
On the low, it could be as simple as I don't like the motherfucker who made it.
Yeah.
That's an acceptable reason. Like, you don't need to lie to people. You know, it could be just like, I don't like Lena Waithe. Oh, okay, shit. Well, thanks for telling the truth. Yeah. I don't got to fucking argue
look,
with you.
Barry Jenkins unfollowed me. I still watch his shit.
Yeah.
I still like him.
He's a good guy. Other than that,
it says you like Asian starlets. Maybe that would have.
No, I think people got tired of my Pretty Little Liars tweets. But if I was anybody else, if it was anybody else doing the shit, oh, this guy's quirky and funny. But no, but like me, no, I lose five. So I'm kind of like giving up on Twitter.
Oh,
you know, I'll post where I'm gonna be doing Barry shows.
Chris's heart.
Yeah, Barry. Yeah. You know, I invited him to my show when I was in San Francisco, to try to get him to come out, but whatever.
Yeah, what do you think about the ending, Chris?
I mean, it was kind of hopeful. It was just like, well, she got out of that last thing, and I think maybe she goes through more. I mean, Ridgeway's gone, but I think it's somewhat hopeful. She's with that little girl, you know. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the Last of Us vibes, but you know, I'm joking. Black like Ellie. Shit. Yeah, Black Ellie. I thought it was hopeful because the little girl, she went back and got that girl, and you know, after that town was ravaged, it was just like that was a thing, like where it was just like that's when I got nervous, like I was like really nervous in Indiana because I was like, when are the bullets gonna come through that church?
I really love the way they did Indiana Winter, because the one, like, while you did get to experience a little bit of joy in Indiana Autumn. I also was like you. The foreboding sense was right there.
Yeah.
But the way the white people attacked the town and the church, and just how savage and quick and brutal it was, and that familiar feeling of like, oh, here we go. Like,
yeah.
Then they're going to kill all the black. And then the black people get them guns.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, now see, this is what I'm in for. It wasn't, these are my ancestors' hands right here, motherfucker.
Yeah.
I love the way they fought back, even in the midst of, obviously, this is still very tragic and people lost their lives. But like when the light-skinned preacher woman, preachers, when she got the gun and she like shot two dudes coming through the door, like,
yeah,
I was like, yo, I love this shit.
And Barry can do action.
Who knew? Yeah, dog. Yeah.
It's almost like I was just joking online. I just like, oh, Barry Jenkins should do a rom-com next. Something light. But then somebody was like, he should do a Marvel movie. I was like, well, he could if he wanted, but
low key, yo. Cause that was the thing too. He said in an interview, and someone asked him, I think Larry Wilmore was like, you ever just think about doing a rom-com? And he was like, yeah, the shit I find funny and the shit that America finds funny. Nah, you don't see a rom-com from me.
I remember him say that.
I gotta listen to that one. I haven't listened to that. Okay.
Yeah, I was like, I bet you every comedian would like it.
Oh yeah, that's his nigga. The first thing I thought was like, you know what? I will watch the dark Barry Jenkins comedy, but I got a feeling that America would not be down with that.
Because Medicine for Melancholy had some funny stuff in it, but it was like there was some darkness about like the interracial dating shit and just like this really like visceral, there's a lot of anger in that Wyatt Cenac character and it's like I get it,
like his example of something that made him laugh during the filming of this was depilatory. Like
pillar.
He said that shit made him, he was like, he was cracking up on the set, and I'm like, yeah, you right, that's dark. they not ready for that in the rom-com.
Yeah. I mean, shit, I mean people will fuck with it because it's him, they'll give it a shot. I think
that's true,
you know,
except the Griot.
I mean, his friend Chloe Zhao got the Eternals, so
yeah.
I mean, listen.
Whatever he does, I'm watching. So that's a given.
Yeah.
You know, it really don't matter what he do. But I just, you know, like I said, the ending I thought was dope, and I really love the exploration of the Underground Railroad. I think it's episode 9 when she literally goes down there, and you kind of get to see some of the inner workings of it, and she meets all those people and talks to the conductors, and
she's got
to
tell her story, her testimony.
She finally has to tell her story, and I really love that. And of course, I love that she kills Ridgeway.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I don't need none of this turn the other cheek, none of this. Like, this nigga need to die, and let's get it done. So that was my favorite, and Homer has to watch it.
Yeah.
Like, no. I'm like, nigga, you're lucky she ain't shoot your ass too.
Yeah, because you about to be a slave, Homer.
Yeah, this shit was directed by Rod Morrow. Guess what happened to your little ass?
Yeah,
it was writing about me in the grill.
Rod killed that little black boy.
Yeah, why did you feel so it's so necessary to kill this little black? Because this little motherfucker was a cone. Did you watch my series or not? Now, yeah. All my podcast interviews would be fucked up.
I just like
very all sensitive and shit. Like, you know, if you don't want to watch it, I understand. And you know, we had a trauma specialist.
You watch this shit, motherfucker.
Right. I'm like, first of all, you need to watch it, you sellout motherfucker. Let me see your review. What you say about me, bitch? I'm like, Rod is canceled.
He went after people reviewing his movie.
Oh, right. My God.
Yeah. I made this movie for people like your dumb ass. Look at you. Oh, I don't know at all. Oh, you like the white man. You should examine what that mean about your ass. You like this white man. What, you want to fuck Joel Edgerton? We'll be right back. Henry Harris Razors.
We'll be right back.
Use Rod Morrow. No way.
Right, yeah. Headspace. I get canceled. I wish I would talk bad about my movie.
These motherfuckers, man. That shit just...
It's, you know what? It's really easy now too to do that. It's paint by numbers.
I'm being different. I'm a contrarian. It's really
easy for them to do it.
I don't even think you got to watch the shit to do it now.
No, you don't.
You don't.
No, it's purely easy. You can just watch the trailers of each episode, pick out the shit you want, just talk about it.
Yep.
And you can just make up shit. Who gives a shit?
Nobody checks.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody checks. I watched Harriet. I saw that thread when I got out of it, and somebody said some shit about. Yeah. Some shit like she lets the master go, and it was just a bunch of bullshit. It was just like, you know, and this character here is, he's a slave catcher, but you're supposed to be rooting for him. I'm like, no, the fuck, did you watch this? What, where are you getting this from?
I just said, you know, I was having fun with it. I just said, I don't think Harriet found the Tesseract in real life. I don't think she had a katana blade, but other than that, you know, that shit was all right.
Yeah. when Nick Fury shows up at the end and invite her into the Avengers,
show up.
I thought that was a little crazy.
Yeah, like, she ain't do that.
Two-eyed Nick Fury. It was weird. It was both of his eyes. Here was like, this.
It's like Captain Marvel. Oh, fuck. Like, but come on, young. It's too much, man. Yeah. And it just made me like, but what he was talking about in those interviews, just like, it just may unlocked that. Not that I quote unquote needed it, but that appreciation for the ancestors, it made me proud, you know? You know, so it's like, it's one of those things, like it's a reminder, you know? Cause I don't know. I grew
up then. Cause that's what he wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you guys know this, but like I grew up in the Maryland, DC area where, you know, somebody tweeted this recently that said, I got to try to find it, but she is a woman who said something like, if you're from PG County, you grow up thinking like black people just run shit in general.
Yeah.
And it's blackness. I went to a predominantly black Catholic school, mm-hmm. and I was taught by black teachers, and we had, you know, it's when we talk about what's that term you guys introduced me to, the core, what is the curriculum?
Critical race theory.
Critical race theory and stuff like that. I was just like, oh yeah, they should have that. You know, it's just like, yeah, they should. Cause we grew up with like,
you got a comprehensive education.
Yeah. Right? Like I knew who I was, and you'd have like Mary McLeod Bethune, Charles Drew,
you get that
like cartoon pictures of black heroes all throughout the classroom. And it was just like, yeah, I'm proud of who I am. Like, you're not going to
get
me
that either.
Oh, okay.
You didn't get that in Texas.
I was writing this thing. I don't know if I'll ever put it out, but I was writing this thing about shame and how it affected my learning of black history and how I would feel the way that it was taught in our school. I'd feel ashamed during Black History Month.
Really? Because
they made it so different from everything else we learned.
Wow.
It was very much like they would play the Eyes on the Prize series. I don't know if y'all ever saw those.
Yeah, yeah.
But no introduction, by the way, just hey, cut that shit out. And then they just turn off the lights, put on this fucking brutal documentary of black people being fucked up and Martin Luther King getting killed every year. And, you know, there's a handful of black people that they teach you about that everyone does a book report on, Charles Drew, you know, Rosa Parks and all this shit. And the then
who did the open heart surgery.
Yeah. You get that shit. You know, George Washington Carver.
Obviously.
Yeah, right. You get that shit. And then they just totally don't prepare you for the fact you're going to walk outside of that classroom and your white classmates are going to just still be white with no lesson learned from any of that. You're going to be black, but now you're carrying the anger and the shame of this thing that was given to you with no guidance. And it fucked me up for a long period of time about that shit, man.
By the way, the whole of Black History Month to a teacher is to white teachers, it's a chore to them.
Right.
They don't want to do it. And yep. It's like, we see it. We see it on you. It's a chore to you. You don't want to do this.
Yeah.
You don't want to do this because you're too worried that, well, first of all, you don't want to teach about slavery. So you can't say no shit about it. It's just a chore.
And if you are a good teacher that cares about that shit, you still care about the white kids' feelings.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you don't want to be too much because now it's a headache. I taught them the real shit. Now I got to worry about whose parents is going to fucking come in and complain. Like, it was just horribly done. And I think on purpose, you know what I mean? So that people don't want to learn about it. And that to this day, motherfuckers look up and see some new black shit gets approved on Netflix. And then they get mad about the fact that it exists. And it's like, we shouldn't have to hold that. That's not our burden to carry.
I was just listening to something. I was reading something somewhere about Aunt Jemima, how, you know, she was a successful woman and blah, 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 but it's political correctness is now taken it away and canceled her out. I'm like, you're the ones who used her name as a slur.
Right.
You're the ones who used her to degrade us. You did that. Mm-hmm. We didn't do that with Aunt Jemima. We didn't do that.
You want Aunt Jemima back. For what?
Yeah. So you
can. It's not like you're going to teach us about her in schools. You want her back so you can call me an Aunt Jemima, right?
Yeah, you did that so you could degrade her. Same thing with Uncle Ben and any black person thing. You wanted to, you use it against us.
Right.
We don't want this anymore. Now it's like, no. These were great people. But no, you used them against us. You did that. We didn't do that.
When I was prepping for this, I read a little interview piece, a piece on Chase Dillon, who played Homer, and he comes from a good family in Connecticut, and he was saying how at his Catholic school, he saw one kid making fun of another black kid that said, a white kid came over to him and said, stop resisting, and called him a slur. Mm. So, I mean, that's in Connecticut. I did find that that tweet, this girl, woman, conscious spice, Viva La Marie says, it's a thread, actually. I didn't realize PG County will have you thinking black folks run America. Growing up there as a black person makes it exceptionally hard for me to accept the treatment of my people in other areas because it really does not have to be this way. Mm-hmm. I would also like to make it clear I am not celebrating elitism. I am celebrating a place where black people can exist. And their first thought isn't that black people are a secondary race. Wealth is not the only benefit of PG when we have the best parks and rec in the state. Kids can play on boys and girls teams and that are black run. That's true. There are black churches, businesses, restaurants, HOA leaders, etc. And I think that should be celebrated. Finally, one group is not the majority. And you know, that's true. Like some,
that's real.
Another comic called it like Wakanda in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Nah, that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, Michelle Obama writes something similar about Chicago, about this, but you know, and it's sad because the only places we can do that in America for black people is where there's wealth, because any other way it's taken out of blackness.
Yeah.
So if you live like where I'm from in my black neighborhood, you get too good at anything, then it becomes a race to how do you get out of here?
Right.
Oh, you smart? Do you want to go to Duke? Well, you wanna go to UNC Chapel? You wanna get the fuck away from these niggas? Oh, you good at basketball? Hey, you wanna go to Catholic school? You wanna go to the other side of town? We gonna give you a scholarship? Like, everything is just funneling all the talent, all the wealth out of the
community. Two things are happening. One, you're taking a resource out of the community. You.
Yep.
Not your money, not your, just you, the resource is now gone.
Yep.
That's the first thing. The second thing is, you're putting yourself into hostile territory daily.
Yep.
To what end?
Yep.
To what
end? I would even throw in a third thing. It then stigmatizes everybody that you leave behind as the problem,
right,
that was holding you back. Like, it's like it immediately puts you on the adversarial path against your own community, because it's like, well, you want to come over here and succeed, you need to come over here with these white folks now. Stop bullshitting. You know them niggas over there, they just gonna drag you down. Like, terrible.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think Reese and I talked about that when he was on the show last year.
Yeah, probably about PG County.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing. Like, it's like where you kind of have a, if you're from PG and you're black, you do kind of have a certain ego, a certain swagger. Mm-hmm. I don't think I fully, like, you see it like in somebody like Wale or Odyssey, as far as like entertainers are concerned.
Right.
But there is a certain, there's a certain sensibility or a certain pride that you have, you know?
And I like that the show gets into that inner dynamic between black people too, because once they get to Indiana, you still have that conflict within the community,
mm-hmm,
of the freed man who had paid his way out of slavery, brought his children and wife out of slavery, but was looking at black fugitives who escaped from the South.
These
as days. Right. Yeah. Like, and ultimately it was his pride and wanting to show up white people, because he still had that anger in him.
Yeah.
Like, he still, like, he wasn't exactly a coon. Like, he still felt like, I'm smarter and better than any white man.
Because he did have that scene, right? He had that scene. He was like, yes, I'm smarter than you guys.
Bruh.
Basically.
Nigga.
Yeah. I was like, oh, shit.
My man Barry be doing this thing. Like I said, he gives you complicated characters. He doesn't give you there's no easy outs where you just go, this person is the coon, or this person is the good guy. I love that scene where he's like, because you think at first, like, oh, this Samboan ass
Mingo
pissing up the white people, nigga. And then he looked at that white man and said, he goes, look, you start acting like that, they're gonna start thinking you think you're smarter than him. He's like, I am.
Yeah.
I'm smarter than all of you. And I was like, God damn.
I was like, hold up.
Caesar did that when they were in was it North Carolina? Where was the one with that?
South Carolina.
Caesar did that with his boss, but he just didn't say it.
Yeah.
It was all over his face.
He's like, it says right here on the wall. How you do it. What you trying to say, boy?
Yeah, you can read. I was waiting on him to say that. You can read.
Shit. Because I don't care. Like, I'm writing about this, and it's like, I am not my ancestors. I fucking hate that shit.
Me too.
Right. Well, who the fuck are you?
Are you? Yeah.
Who the fuck
are you? It just means white people succeeded in the way they taught us black history. That's what that means. That's what it came. Every time I read that, I just think, and they won, because you don't know what the fuck you talking about. And that's all they want. They want us to see eyes on the prize and think every black person who wanted freedom went downtown, got their ass whooped, and then we got freedom. That's not how that worked at all.
I started talking about that last weekend during the hosting set. I was like, I can't be doing this shit. I said, the five black people here know who what the fuck I'm talking about. And then I was just like, you know, I was just like, all right. Oh.
Man, first night out,
I was like, do it.
I was like, y'all asked me to host. I can headline and feature and stuff. Obviously, when I'm on the road, I can headline, but like, yo, I was like, oh, let me just, I'm not trying to mess this boy's show up.
I'm giving him all the advice. I'm like, hey man, they hired you, dog. They know what the fuck.
That would be a hilarious.
They should have hired you. Say what you want to say.
But the headliner, shout out to Moses Storm. He was like, hey man, you really know how to set up a room, bro.
that would be a hell of a scene in a TV show.
Yeah.
Like a comedian that stars hitting you with all that woke shit, that race shit, and then be like, oh, and coming to the stage.
Josh Gondelman, everybody.
You guys know him, you love him.
The nicest white guy on the face of the earth, Josh Gondelman.
It's like your last line before you start hosting. It's like 8 minutes and 46 seconds.
That's okay. Why I'm gonna be up here.
That's what happened.
That length of time
we all saw. Anyway, coming to the stage, guys. You know them, you love them, you appreciate them.
Put my knee on your comedy neck for 46 seconds.
Oh my god, man! I was like, oh, I gotta. I was like, let me just eat my quesadilla and get off stage. Get my quesadilla and my salad.
It's too good.
Oh man, but stuff like that, you can't not talk about that stuff, man. You can't not like.
There you go, crazy.
Yeah, you can't, and it's not to be like, you know, like Randolph, you said it a couple years ago, like black art's gonna be great.
I told you,
and it's gonna be inspiring, like this stuff that we're living through.
About to be crazy,
and it's not
people
like,
not ready for it, man.
Yeah.
They're not really ready for
it. That's just historic. There's been black renaissances before, and this is why. Because they were going through something at that time, and then there was a renaissance.
And it's not like it's in my wheelhouse to talk about that stuff. It's like I'm doing something
right.
That is so different.
Yeah. Didn't come on stage. Hamburger.
Yeah.
Now, also, black oppression. Let's talk about it.
Hamburger. Yeah. Now, let's talk about these crackers. Hamburger.
Because you got to exist. Like, because we have to exist in this shit. And because, like, it's a lot of that shit. It's like, that's why I thought Black as Fuck was so genius. Because a lot of this shit is because of slavery.
We act in certain, whether good or bad,
we act in these ways because of slavery. And it's in us. It's in our DNA. It's embedded in our DNA. And
the art is, I think the art is taking that and making the product. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like that's the hard part.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
slavery, right?
And it's also the fun part, and it's this also too. Fun too.
Yeah, that's what makes it fun. That's what makes it good. Figuring out how I'm gonna make this shit work. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That's what makes the people great, and to make some motherfuckers sorry.
Yeah, and that, you know, but so it goes. Like, do you guys have any like final thoughts on this show?
Listen, I'm still with it, but I love it. I'm going on. I'm going to the end. I'm the watch one, step away for a second and think about it and come back and watch another one.
Yeah.
I'm not the, let's just blaze all the way through this.
Yeah. I consume this the same way that I consume The Last of Us Part Two.
Yeah.
I probably and Barry Jenkins did say that he made it purposely so people could take a break.
And when he said that, I was like, well, that makes perfect sense. Cause
I watched it. I binged it and I could feel it.
Me too. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I binged it and I could be like, oh, this is, if I would have taken 6 days and come back to this, starting right here makes a lot more sense. Yes,
right. You jump right back in.
Yeah. It's like
a book with chapters in it.
It makes you wonder if he would have benefited from a weekly release.
I don't know.
You know what? Now that you say that, I had always been the motherfucker, just drop all the shit.
Yeah, me too.
One time. But when WandaVision came out, I was like, I like this build. I like this build. And then when Falcon and Winter Soldier, I was like, oh, this is I like this week. We're all talking about it leading up to the next one. I can't wait to see this shit.
It's a communal. It definitely makes it more of a communal experience when they do it week to week. I mean, Mayor of Easttown was just like because that was all helps. Who done it.
I think it helps based on the genre too, because I think the more fantastical elements benefit from a week of discussion.
Yeah, I started
because it's like, what did you think of this? How did it? Keep in mind, I still enjoyed it. I watched it all. I still thought it was good. But I just think that him saying he built the brakes in and then thinking about like, oh yeah, I guess if I would have taken that week, I mean, it would have been weird as shit when you got to episode 7, it was 17 minutes, but when you, other than that, when you take that week, it kind of makes it, it makes it flow a little differently in your head because you're like, oh yeah, because time is passing. Time is passing in real life, and then I'm coming back to this shit. So, you know, that might, you know, that's a note. You know, it probably could have.
Think about this. When she was in the attic and she said, we've been up here for a month. I was like, a month has passed?
Right. Mm. Yeah. There's several moments. I mean, shit, episode 2 out the gate.
That was
when, like, you just show up there, they're dancing at a fucking, like, cotillion.
Yeah, yeah.
He's dressed to the nines.
Job. She's in school.
Yeah.
Like, they should stay here.
How long have they been there?
Like, you just, like, I'm legitimately like, hold on, let me hit the back button. Did I skip an episode?
Yeah.
Is this the end? How did I get to the end so fast? So, yeah, that week break will help.
I wonder with the success of this, would more adaptations be TV shows instead or limited series instead of films? Yeah, movies.
Maybe. I don't know. A lot of shit came together that was one of a kind on this.
Yeah.
A lot of, you know, Barry Jenkins, Brad Pitt, Colton Whitehead. Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot to ask. Because he said he barely really got it done before the pandemic.
Yeah.
So, like, this shit really lucked out in a way to get made. So, I don't know if we'll see a lot of this. Although the way they buying content, maybe, you know.
This is more epic in scale. I mean, like, I wonder if they, like, if they took the Nickel Boys. The Nickel Boys was much of as a quicker read.
Mm-hmm.
But I could almost see that as a limited series, like you 7 or 8 episodes or I don't know.
I like the shit though. I like this.
Yeah.
These limited series are dope. You're fleshing out ideas. You're mm-hmm. making a complete statement. And the best thing about them is they end. So, and you know it's ending. So they can bring you to a full circle storytelling point as opposed to some of the seasonal shit.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we might get a season 2. Fuck, what do we do? You know, like,
right.
I love Lovecraft Country. But you mm-hmm. could tell the last episode, they were like, we may or may not get renewed.
Right. Yeah.
So let's tell as much story as we can as fast as possible, just in case these motherfuckers be tripping
right.
and we don't get a season 2. At least the people that watch this won't feel like they got ripped off.
Right. Yeah, because they asked Misha Green in that round table. They were like, oh, are we going to see a season 2? She said, I'd like to see one.
Right. Right. That's why when people was kind of going hard on that episode, I was like, bro, you got to understand the big picture here, because what you asking for is this assumption that she gets a season 2 because season 1 was excellent. Right. Now, that is what I like to call a white assumption.
Right.
Because if she was white, she would get a season 2, no questions asked.
Right.
This is a black show.
Oh, she'd have got a season 2 and 3.
Like, we coming back. We coming back.
Season 3.
Right.
Then again, what I call the Game of Thrones treatment.
Yes.
Oh, we don't even have the last season written. Don't worry about that.
Don't worry about it. Yeah, don't worry about it. Go ahead and start writing a treatment for FOMO seasons. You know, we'll see where it goes from there.
Something out in the end.
Yeah. You black, you can get all them fucking 9 out of 10 rating. Vulture says this. Nigga, you might not get renewed. That's what I know. So you need to write this shit like your life depend on it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I loved it, man. And I thought Barry was in his bag. Like I said, it's not my favorite thing he's ever done, but I think when you've done excellent shit, that's not a knock.
I mean,
you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I like that he tried something different, man, because people normally at that angle, when you got something going like he got, is what's the point of stepping out into something new? Because you really just doing it to challenge yourself.
Still inside of his wheelhouse, though. It wasn't that far of a step for him.
Well, he said it was the hardest thing he's ever done.
I was going to say,
I have no doubt, because just the scope of it, keeping track of everything is I don't have any doubt of that. Because
he said Steven Soderbergh,
his wheelhouse of what
he did it.
Steven Soderbergh said that it's going to be hard. You're going to quit. You're going to want to quit, but you're going to keep going and it'll be the best thing you ever done. Something like that he was saying.
Yeah. Cause I mean, it's basically 9 episodes and a mini movie. And they're all like a movie.
Yeah.
Like this motherfucker, like he did that shit.
Not a guy who does episodic stuff.
Right. So nothing but props to him for even stepping out of his lane to try to do this and then knocking it out the park. And then, like I said, looking forward to whatever he does after this. But I think this is about the best you can hope for.
Don't forget that.
What happened?
And in the middle of COVID, too.
In the middle, yeah, in the middle of the pandemic. Like, he said they filmed everything and they had to go back,
yeah,
do reshoots for some of it. All of that's during the pandemic.
Yeah.
So, a beast, as always, man. Love, Barry.
Yeah. Yeah, I ran off any... Well, you got it. You loved it, too. I loved it, too. I still think maybe I would go... Medicine for Melancholy has sentimental value for me.
I was just about to say, that's just me some to you.
Yeah, I was going to say, it don't, yeah. You might as well take that one off the table.
He had more money.
Right, you know, but it's the whole... It's
like, if he did Medicine for Melancholy now, like if he could do it again, relaunch it, even the same actors, but just his budget, his style now, do you think it could be possibly any better?
Yeah, but because he only had 13 grand, I think, to make right. that. But I still, but like, I like those type of movies, like where it's mm-hmm. just like, you know, like I used to do a joke, because I used to say all these like slave movies. I said, you know, Best Man Holiday was so good, I forgot that black people were, I said something like, I was so happy to see black people with cell phones in a movie. It's like something just like it was so like good. And you know, you just have to be reminded. It's like, I like those movies, but it's just like, fuck, can we just see black people now going through regular problems? You know,
well, you know, that's one of my other favorite genres, black executive fan fiction.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the best.
Medicine was a little more, it was gritty. It was like that art house shit that you throw on late at night where nobody gets their head fucking cut off.
You throw on late at night.
That's what I said. Yeah, yeah. That I throw on at night or something. Nobody's head gets cut off. There's two people just trying to relate to each other.
Shit, I'm looking for the head getting cut off shit late at night.
Mm-hmm. You are? Really?
Where the head cut off movies at?
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, so it goes.
Late at night? Yeah.
Cut their heads off.
Like, if somebody in here punches somebody's head off their body or something along those lines, that's what I'm.
I need a white man trying to save his family.
Yeah,
from swarthy blacks.
Well, I say go see Wrath of Man. That's the best thing I've seen. And I went to the movies. I saw Wrath of Man. I saw Cruella, and I saw A Quiet Place too.
Did you see Nobody?
Nobody was very good.
Was Wrath of Man better than Nobody? I just bought Nobody. I haven't pressed play yet.
Nobody is a little more fun. It's okay. Way more fun. Way more fun Impossible White Man movie. Wrath of Man is like grounded, but it's still Impossible White Man, but it's just a little more grounded and just kind of a fun. They're both fun.
Okay. But I got high hopes for it.
Those are two
high
hopes
for Wrath of Man.
Both of those are the most fun that I've had this year as far as movies are concerned.
Yeah. The key element to a good Impossible White Man movie is a lead actor that needs a hit real bad. And I think Jason Statham might be in that category now. I think he may have had enough of a fall to really need a movie that will bring him back.
Well, you know, and Jason Statham, and so this is a Guy Ritchie movie, and it's like Guy Ritchie took all the comedy. He kind of took the comedy. Like, The Gentleman was kind of, I thought it was okay, but he was making fun of Asian people too much in there, so they say. And it was a little bit of campiness in that one. This one, he took all of that out and just like, this is action. This is going to be
man. They need hits.
It's a heist movie.
That's the best ones, man.
Yeah, and it's very stylized in a way that's like really gritty and it's fun. They're both
like
really
you go all the way back to Die Hard and think about how Bruce was falling off. Bruce Willis he needed that hit, gave us an iconic classic.
Yeah,
but like Liam Neeson done did like four or five of them joints.
Yeah, but the best one is Taken. Because he needed a hit.
One.
Yeah. Now here's the thing. Once it becomes a hit, all bets are off, right?
Yeah.
Then the motherfucker about to do 12 sequels that suck. But that first one, that motherfucker need that.
Statham made The Transporter.
Yes.
You gotta get a hit out of this shit.
Needed a hit, bruh.
This low budget movie, we getting a hit out of this
one. Then he made like 12 bad movies in a row. Yep. But yep. He needed that first one real, real bad.
He made that movie made by Stallone, one where he was in Louisiana. He beat up a town in Louisiana over his daughter.
Yes.
And then another hit, man.
No, he needed it, man.
Yeah, you guys
should be
guys,
bringing them people back, boy.
When something happened to your kid, like yeah. You the lead guy, something happened to your son or your yeah. daughter, and you just fuck everybody up.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do we got to do? Introduce the daughter. You got it.
Yep. So now they've stolen your daughter. All right, cool. Got the whole movie.
This is something I can do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all right, y'all. This has been great, man. As always, I love shooting the shit with you guys about this man. Stuff. And just plug anything you got going on. This will go up. This is going up this weekend. So
I got nothing really coming. Just check my social media, Randolph Terrence, on Instagram, Real Talk For You on Twitter, the all words spelled out, Real Talk For You, Randolph Terrence on Facebook, and the podcast Three Guys on Apple and on Patreon. So join the Patreon. If not, just check us out at the free spots.
Yep. And for me, the blackguywithtips.com is where you can find our podcast, our show, and Spotify. If you want to listen to the podcast, it's exclusively on Spotify, The Black Guy Who Tips. And yeah, appreciate y'all. And thanks for having me, Chris. As always, I always love these conversations with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you, Chris. I love talking with both of y'all. Y'all know that.
You too, Randolph.
Thank y'all for doing this.
All right. I appreciate you guys. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time. Take it easy.